This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
Hour number two officially underway. You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Shukri Wrights. We got Brian McDonald producing the show back in Houston. Shu, let me ask you this. You have one belt. It is for perennial underachiever. Mm-hmm. And you can either give it to Aaron Rodgers or the Dallas Cowboys, as you said, strictly for the Dak Prescott era, even though I think it extends all the way back into the 90s. Between the Dak Prescott Dallas Cowboys and Aaron Rodgers, you have the underachieving championship belt. Whose waist are you wrapping it around?
Ooh, that's a good one. But I'm going to go to Aaron Rodgers, because last January, when he lost in the divisional round to the 49ers, I can't remember an athlete who got absolutely shellacked online as bad as Aaron Rodgers did. And I was one of the people who did the shellacking, because I said it at the time, like, he is officially, in my book, the great underachiever of all time. And I even put him ahead of the Dallas Cowboys. Why? Because for a man who is as talented, he may be the most talented quarterback to ever play in the NFL. This is before Mahomes. Mahomes' career is still young. That is someone who should have more than one Super Bowl. You see, with the Cowboys, I look at it and I say, man, they've blown some really big opportunities in the playoffs. But it's become a team thing with the Cowboys. What Aaron Rodgers is an individual thing. That's why I say it's Aaron Rodgers.
So with the Cowboys, it's pretty clear it's Jerry Jones. He's the one common denominator. Like I said, this really goes back to the 90s.
Team.
With Aaron Rodgers, I mean, so many opportunities. Tom Brady threw three interceptions in that AFC Championship game 2 years ago. He lost. Rodgers didn't throw a single bleeping touchdown pass this past year against the Niners in that loss. So it's Aaron Rodgers. He takes home the championship belt for Biggest Loser. Stick with us here on the Diehards NBA Talk up next.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
Shu, let me ask you this.
¿Qué pasó?
For a while when we were growing up, we're about the same age, that the stronger conference in the NBA was unquestionably the West.
Booyah!
Then it started in recent years to seesaw. For example, there's been times in recent memory where, like 2 years ago, when the Bucks won the championship, I also think that by the time Jamal Murray went down with a season-ending knee injury, the Lakers couldn't stay healthy that whole campaign.
Right.
And it just looked like there were more legitimate championship contenders on the Eastern Conference side of the bracket than there were in the West. But right now, as things stand, no resolution to Kevin Durant's trade request, Donovan Mitchell still in a Utah Jazz uniform. You look at the East versus the West, what side is the stronger conference?
Easily the West, because I look at the Western Conference right now in the NBA. I'll give you five teams that I could say they got a chance to win a championship. Golden State, that's obviously number one. Phoenix, number two. Dallas, number three. Denver, number four. And then the 15, debatable and whatnot, but I would be willing to even bank on the Lakers as being at 15 if LeBron and AD are healthy, and that's the big if. So I look at the Western Conference and I say, listen, this is no disrespect to the East, because we know what the East are composed of between Boston, Philly, Milwaukee, Miami, and whatnot. But I don't think it's really much of an argument if you're asking me, like, well, which conference is going to be is the most – it's the strongest conference between the two conferences, the West.
I can poke major holes in two of those teams from the East that you just mentioned on top of it, in Miami with the lack of scoring power, with Philadelphia where right now we have a motivated James Harden.
By the way, and the lack of scoring power for Miami is what cost them in the Eastern Conference Finals against Boston.
Without a doubt. And now Kyle Lowry's a year older, so mm-hmm. if he's their starting floor general, what does that look like, especially come playoff time, because it's an 82-game season before that? So big questions there. Big questions with James Harden, who even at his apex earned the nickname Little Game James mm-hmm. for not coming through in the biggest moments. And then there is the one about Embiid staying healthy. And then I look out in the West, you named a ton of teams that make it a gauntlet already. I'll add to it the Clippers with Kawhi and Paul George, if they're healthy. That's championship
a great
contender.
One, yeah.
They added John Wall. And another team, I don't know if they quite get onto that level, but I look at the Pelicans, and I'm at least interested to see mm-hmm. how high they climb. Getting Zion back now with Brandon Ingram. Now C.J. McCollum is in the mix after the deadline deal. I like the kid they drafted, 8th overall, Dyson Daniels. A perfect compliment because he's defensive-minded, doesn't need touches.
Precisely.
So, to me, that also speaks to him integrating right away. So, I look at the West and think the Warriors have more competition to get back to the NBA Finals than the Celtics do, even though the Celtics are on equal footing, I'd say, with a now healthy version of the Milwaukee Bucks.
And you know what's interesting about the East this upcoming season? I can't help but to think about this very factor here. Milwaukee, with a healthy Chris Middleton, makes them formidable. But not as formidable as when they won it all in last year, like in 2021. But with all that you said about Miami and a lack of scoring power, if you had a top two team in the East right now that you could say either one of those two teams can win it all next season, Celtics and Brooklyn. Milwaukee would be third. But Boston, Brooklyn, you could say if KD stays, then you can make that argument. But if he's gone, that their chances diminishes because I don't trust Kyrie to solely be able to carry that load at Brooklyn by himself. No way. But the West, I just wonder and I think to myself, man, there's teams out there like Golden State that you just feel like they're more than just a duo. They are so deep that you can't help but to feel that they are the envy of the NBA. You think of obviously Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. I mean, if you can get close to being back to the old Klay Thompson of pre-injuries and whatnot, Draymond Green, and then we saw what Andrew Wiggins was able to do, and Kevon Looney, and you, like, I can go on and on. But Golden State, Denver, and then don't forget about, we talk about Jamal Murray, and then now the reigning MVP, and Nikola Jokic. Man, those teams alone have some of the best duos there is in the NBA, which is why if Dallas could ever find that number two piece to play alongside Luka Doncic, watch out. Oof. And they got to an NBA, to the East or Western Conference Finals last year against Golden State without having a true number two.
Yeah, I worry about the Mavs because they had Christian Wood, but they lost Jalen Brunson. So,
Jalen Brunson's a big loss because I wonder where is the secondary offense going to come from.
That's what I'm saying.
You look across and it's like I don't see it because Luka Doncic right now is a guy that's carrying everyone else. I fear Dallas becoming the Cleveland Cavaliers of 2006-2007 when it was LeBron and then everyone else.
Yeah, I look at the Mavs and there's a bunch of Donyell Marshalls out there and Ira Doubles.
Yeah.
That's just not going to get the job done.
No.
It's not going to cut it. And so I look at the Mavs like that, and then I also look around the NBA, and you mentioned the Warriors there, that $400 million payroll. They own their stadium, so it's a cash cow for them. There's a lot of teams that can't say the same, and so it's going to be very interesting to see how they navigate the tax moving forward. Draymond Green, for instance,
right.
said, I want a max extension. I'm Draymond Green. You look at my resume. I don't need to be taking a pay cut. So I think they pay Draymond. But the ramifications of that, when you look at someone like Wiggins making the money he is, how long is he destined to be in Golden State, and what can he do outside of that operation? It's going to be very interesting to see.
And also, Jordan Poole's got to get paid soon.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to think, well, yeah, go give Draymond his money. Yeah, what about Jordan Poole? whom at times in the finals I looked at and I say, man, and although Steph Curry won the MVP of the finals, and deservedly so, Jordan Poole was equally as good. He got better as the series went on.
Yeah, when he gets hot, it's a problem.
Oh, yeah, which is why you can't overlook that. And I wholeheartedly agree with you when you said that paying Draymond Green could have ramifications. Absolutely. Because where the heck is that money going to come from? And the NBA is a salary cap league. It's not a hard salary cap league like the NHL is, but still, you got to be careful. And I think that if you're Draymond Green, yes, get paid, but understand that those key young pieces that you're going to need to keep this dynasty going, they may not get that contract with Golden State because Steph Curry's getting paid. Klay Thompson's getting paid. And now you're asking to get paid big dollars. Be careful now. There's got to be a fine line somewhere.
And then let me ask you this, Shu. If you're Danny Ainge, do you pump the brakes on blowing it up? You say, you know what? We've got some nice role players here. We've now got a ton of draft picks because the Timberwolves, Lord knows why, they overpaid to get Rudy Gobert, the Stifle Tower. And so we have Donovan Mitchell and draft picks to build probably the best offer the Nets are going to get, certainly at this moment. Do you think that instead of completely tearing the house down, they should stop right now and take a big swing to go after Kevin Durant?
Ooh, that's tough. Because I really want to think that a Donovan Mitchell and a KD duo, let's speak hypothetically.
Mitchell would be the centerpiece of the trade. Mitchell and picks are the headlines to go get Kevin Durant, because just the picks won't get it done.
Kevin Durant alone in Utah won't get it done. What are we doing?
Okay.
No. No. So let me understand this correctly, Bobby. Now you just irritated the hell out of me. Like, let's trade away the best centerpiece that you have left in Donovan Mitchell and go get KD. Who is KD surrounded with in Utah? It ain't Rudy Gobert, because he's gone.
You got Bogdan Bogdanovic.
You got to be bleeping me right now.
You got Mike Conley.
You got Mike Conley and Bogdanovich who basically scrubs playing around KD. Like, what are we doing here?
He can't win with that?
Like, you can't win with that. Are you kidding me? And you're talking about an older KD? Like, seriously? Like, at this point, I am so irritated that you even asked that question that I'm sitting here looking across from you like, what the hell are you drinking? Are you drinking Kool-Aid? Are you drinking
Spike?
No, you're drinking vodka in that bottle.
Might be some Ciroc in here.
Oh, my God. Seriously. Like, you know, trading Donovan Mitchell as your centerpiece to get KD, but you're going to try to convince me he can play with Bogdanovich and whoever else is left on Utah. God knows who else. Like, I mean, God.
You keep building. Now you just need role players.
Oh, geez.
You got probably more draft picks that you didn't have to include to get Durant. All of a sudden, you find a nice running mate for him.
Right.
Plus Conley, plus Bogdanovich. It's not a bad team.
Conley and Bogdanovich are not bad players. I was exaggerating a little bit,
but they're
role players for a guy that doesn't win with role players. We saw this in OKC. So why would you think that suddenly, KD, you could possibly win with role players in Utah when he didn't do that in OKC? He needed to go join a super team in Golden State. How would this be any different? It would be any different.
We don't know that he needed to join a super team to win.
No, he needed to because he wanted to chase the ring after the humiliation that he suffered.
He went to his best chance to win a ring. Could he have won it somewhere else?
No.
We'll never know.
The answer is no, Bobby.
I think he was plenty good enough to do it somewhere else.
No, he was not. Where? In the NBA 2016, where else was he going to win a championship?
I think he could have with the Celtics. You would have had
in 2016?
You would have had young.
No, stop it. Stop it.
You would
stop
have
it.
Tatum, Jalen Brown, Al Horford, Kevin.
Tatum and Jalen Brown
Marcus
were young.
Brown,
oh, my
Terry
God.
Rozier.
Bobby. Jalen Brown and Tatum were basically 13-year-olds in 2016. You mean to honestly tell me that KD was going to be able to help those guys win a championship?
Yeah,
those guys didn't even know the best pickup line for the next stranger at the damn bar. Are you talking about KD? What did the Celtics 2016? Are you serious?
Al Horford. You're overflating what their roles would
listen,
be.
Listen, Al Horford
it
was
easier for them to succeed.
Al Horford was the older cousin of the group. He was the older cousin of the group.
He's the glue.
Yeah, the glue, but those guys weren't developed then.
You got your centerpiece, your glue guy, both of whom make life easier for these younger members of the team. I think at some point in that run, they could have won a championship, especially as Tatum and Brown develop. Shoot, we got to go to a break right now. Maybe we pick this up, but we've got a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, you got me so mad. You got me so mad.
We're going to keep emotions running high when we get into burning questions around the NFL, starting in the NFC. You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Chukri Wrights coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. Training camps around the NFL are underway. We need to get into the spiciest, the most burning, the most pressing questions from each conference. We're going to start in the NFC, and we're going to start by looking at the top of the food chain. Shu, who is the team to beat in that conference?
In the NFC right now, that's a tough one, but I really am thinking that it's, man, you really put me on the spot here on this
one.
You're
on the hot seat.
It's a good question because I really want to say the LA Rams, and you know what? Finally, Matthew Stafford has earned my trust. He did perform in the big spots last year when the Rams needed him to. But I do wonder, though, are they still going to be as explosive offensively as they were a year ago? And that is obviously depending on Odell Beckham Jr. How is he going to be going into 2022?
He's not even on a team right now.
I mean, he's not even on a team right now, exactly. But what if he stays? What if he stays, right? And then on top of that, I just wonder about the offensive line. That's my only concern. But as far as the NFC is concerned, the team to beat going into this year, as for a team that I think that could go to the Super Bowl, it's a toss-up between Tampa Bay and my dark horse team going into the season, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Woo!
I think the Eagles could surprise a lot of people. I mean, another year of Jalen Hurts, they got A.J. Brown in that big signing, and something tells me that that Sirianni is going to surprise a lot of people this year. And I do think that the Eagles' defense is not as better than what people give it credit for.
Drafted Jordan Davis.
They drafted Jordan Davis, who I think is going to be a game changer on the defensive side of the ball from day one. So, as far as Tampa Bay is concerned, of course you got the Tom Brady factor, but I'm going to take it a step further. They just added Julio Jones, who I think is going to be very motivated to prove that he still got it. He's there on a one-year deal. You're playing with Tom Brady, the man who beat you in the infamous 28-3 game.
Took your ring away.
Took
now
your
maybe
ring away.
Get one with him.
Exactly. So, man, if you had to put a gun to my head, Buccaneers or Eagles, I'm going Bucs because this is a man, Tom Brady, who still year after year after year gets the weapons that he wants. And that has been his motto, his MO, since he arrived in Tampa Bay prior to the 2020 season. So, right now, I really like Tampa Bay's chances, even though they lost Ndamukong Suh. But I still expect Shaq Barrett to be a key force on the Tampa Bay defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And you bring up the defense, so let's go there. Intact. It's the same one, really, that they won the Super Bowl with a couple of years ago.
Yeah. You know, and nearly pulled off the historic comeback against the eventual Super Bowl champions,
right?
LA Rams.
The Rams were watching that game crap down their leg at the end. They just kind of held on for dear life, and then a horrible call by the now head coach Todd Bowles to go with zero safety help there. So it's Antoine Winfield pressed up against Cooper Kupp, and Kupp goes by him for a touchdown because you put a player in position to fail. But Todd Bowles deserves this opportunity. He's an excellent defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
It's just one mistake. His track record far outweighs that play, as bad a moment as it was. So I'm comfortable with Todd Bowles as the head coach of this team, familiar with the operation, ran the show on defense when they won the Super Bowl a couple years ago in 2020, at home no less. So I really like the Bucs. The Julio Jones addition is a great point, Shu. I don't care that they lost Gronkowski, even though I think Kyle Rudolph is kind of toast.
Which is why I didn't even mention it, because to me that was like more of like a non-factor.
Right. And so, to me, the argument for the Bucs took a rather serious hit today with their starting center, Ryan Jensen, going down, getting carted off. We don't know the answer yet, but it sounds like it's a serious injury, as in potentially season-ending.
That's what I was wondering, if it was a season-ending, because we've seen like players like Ryan Jensen with the roles that they have on the offensive line, how important those losses are, especially on the offensive line, in which that you want to be able to like build continuity like from day one. We know that injuries is going to happen. That's a given. But now I want to see the depth of the offensive line for the Buccaneers really shine through, because this is an offensive line that's probably giving the most important role in the NFL, protecting Tom Brady. So who knows how long Ryan Jensen is going to be out, but I do hope and believe that Tampa Bay will be able to have the answer. Like that's in training camp right now, they'll figure it out. But I also do wonder, when they get into these schemes where the running back, They slide up in protection, or they take that step out when they see that the blitz is coming. How critical is this going to be? And Leonard Fournette is no longer there.
No, he is.
Oh, he's still there.
He's still there.
So his role is going to be even more important. And I'm thinking of that because the NFC is loaded, and you notice the NFC is loaded with pass rushers, most notably the Rams, when they do meet again in the playoffs, because I'm guaranteeing the Rams will be in the playoffs again this season, could that be the difference maker?
Oh, it absolutely is a huge factor. And the Bucs, they can't find out. They're already going to be a pass-heavy offense.
Yeah.
So they cannot afford to find out, can Tom Brady be throwing the ball a high volume throughout the season, which is now a game longer, and absorb consistent punishment as a quarterback who's not mobile, who's playing behind a porous offensive line? Can't happen. So to me, you're all in on this situation. Your team is good enough to win a Super Bowl. You got to invest some draft capital if Jansen is down for the season. Mm-hmm. They lost the starting guard, Alex Kappa, in free agency to the Bengals. This cannot be, especially on the interior, this cannot be a liability and something where Brady is getting the crap kicked out of him week after week. Let me ask you this, Shu, as we continue to look around the NFC landscape. Of the playoff teams that made it to the postseason, when you look at these names, and we talked about two of them just now with the Bucs and the Rams, the Cowboys got there, the Niners, the Cardinals were in there for a minute and melted down in spectacular fashion.
More like explosive diarrhea on themselves.
With the Packers,
most
were
notably
in there.
Kyler Murray. But go ahead.
So when you look at all these teams, who do you see as the least likely to get back to the postseason?
Oh, man, that's a great question. And the only reason why I'm even delaying, I'm just thinking about this as I talk, is because, man, I really, really, really want to say, Arizona. I really do. And I know, I get that Kyler Murray got paid. Obviously, he's paired up with DeAndre Hopkins out west. But I just do not trust their defense. And I know that the people that are out there are saying, you're going to put them ahead of the 49ers who are going with Trey Lance? I would. But I feel like the Niners got nothing to lose. We're going to Trey Lance at this point.
You know who my vote is? The Cowboys. I think they lose the division and don't get enough wins to make a wild card spot, even in the expanded field. Stick with us here on the Diehards, because we're going to be talking AFC on the other side of this break on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You are listening to the Diehards here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Shukri Wright coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. We got Brian McDonald producing the show back in Houston. Shu, we just looked at the NFC landscape. Now let's flip it over to the AFC, and we start with the same question we began the last segment with, only for this new the AFC conference. Who's the team to beat?
In the AFC
I think you said it earlier when we had Sean McGuire on.
I got Buffalo. Like, and I really wholeheartedly believe that. And adding Von Miller on defense.
Yeah.
Game changer. Yeah, he's getting older, but he still got it. You saw it last season when he got traded to the Rams as part of their Super Bowl run. He's still that dude. And Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, man, that's a surefire of a home run duo
between PB&J quarter right there.
Right. Between quarterback and receiver as there is in the league. Like, what is there not to like about Buffalo? And I look at offensively, Josh Allen is that dude. He is not question of, he is that dude now. Like, he is, in terms of top quarterbacks in the NFL, he's there.
MVP candidate.
Absolutely. And you look at, like, the run game. You look at, like, the pass attack, obviously. And defensively, they're going to be even better. And Sean McDermott has got another year of underneath his belt. And I'm going to tell you this right now. Don't be surprised if McDermott and Allen use the lessons from last year's loss to Kansas City as a teaching point for this year's team, because I think Buffalo is truly that loaded. They are that good. And yes, I'm putting them ahead of Kansas City, because the loss of Tyreek Hill is huge, because he was that game changer type of offensive player, where he was a speed demon. Like, and I say that affectionately. Like, he was someone that you had no answer for on defense in terms of covering him.
He might be the biggest matchup nightmare in the NFL.
Oh, 100%,
so,
yeah.
To lose that piece, a massive concern. And we're going to talk about Mahomes and the Chiefs in just a second here. But to add to the points you're laying out about...
Just real quick.
Go ahead.
On that part, there are some people that would say, what about Mecole Hardman? He hasn't shown it yet. I'm not putting him there in that same category with Tyreek Hill.
Last year, playing alongside Tyreek Hill, because they let Sammy Watkins go,
yeah.
I invested in Mecole Hardman as a late-round fantasy pick. No one cares about your fantasy picks. I'm doing it anyways. And he had a horrendous season.
Oh, man.
And so, I mean, he hasn't stepped up. And I thought when they drafted him to be a Tyreek Hill replacement, because they thought, due to off-field issues, they were about to lose Tyreek Hill. Playing alongside him, it hasn't worked. More opportunities, he hasn't produced at a high enough level. So, Mecole Hardman, to me, very fast, but he just hasn't popped for him, and I don't know if it ever is going to. And so, I look at the Chiefs and... a lot of question marks about that team and how they're trying to replace Tyreek Hill. We'll get to that in just a second. What I want to add to the Bills' point, because you're right, Von Miller feels like the missing piece to the puzzle, that pass rusher who can get home to the quarterback.
Absolutely.
Greg Rousseau, rookie from Miami last year, had a promising season, showed how good he can be. Growth isn't always
that linear. Linebacker Alonzo?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ooh.
So, I mean, they've got a squad, and I loved – they also had a good draft. No surprise with Brandon Bean. He's excellent at his job. Mm-hmm. But James Cook, running back out of Georgia, younger brother of Dalvin Cook, is maybe the best pass-catching back from this past draft. So to add him into the mix makes them even more dynamic. They got punt god Matt Areza. So I like the draft the Bills had, too, to just help round out this roster and complete the team. I think they are definitely the squad to beat in the AFC, even though they're not the one who went to the Super Bowl last year. And then I look at the Bengals and say, I love what you did, because we've always questioned, will they spend on this roster? They've got their franchise quarterback and star receiver on rookie deals. If not now, then never. And to their credit, that's what they did. They went out and bolstered that front five. So the Bengals are firmly in the mix as well. I don't think that was just a blip on the radar last year.
Oh, no, not at all. This is just the beginning. And what makes this particularly scary is I look at Cincinnati and – I look at them and say, yeah, That team, as long as Joe Burrow is healthy, and I say that because he is going to miss time during training camp, and that's the only thing that worries me. We saw what a healthy Joe Burrow is and can do. I think that if he's healthy with that offense, I think they should be fine. But I do wonder what the offensive line is going to look like this year. They cannot be as bad as they were last year, where they allowed a league-high 70 sacks combined between on the regular season and the postseason. I think they will be better in terms of the O-line, but I do think that Cincinnati, they're dangerous. They're very dangerous.
Yeah, do not count out the Bengals. And then looking at the Chiefs, there were some, quite frankly, let's call a spade here.
Yeah.
There were some racist comments made from an anonymous defensive coordinator towards Patrick Mahomes. I apologize, I didn't bring up the quote for this, but
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right, and so he said, you know, just to paraphrase it here, because I don't have it in front of me, but
right.
I know that what he said was, if you take away his first read, what is he? And, you know, basically, like, he tries to win with running as opposed to throwing, which, by the way, winning is winning, I would say.
Right.
I also don't agree with the assessment there, but so, because he's probably not right or wrong, you know, I don't want to, you know, give this person any weight behind the merit, but with Tyreek Hill leaving Kansas City, does Patrick Mahomes, as the weapons around him diminish, does he have something to prove?
Mahomes, I think this is going to be the biggest test of his career, and this is going to sound wildly hilarious to America, but no, seriously, if you really think about it, massive test, because you lose Tyreek Hill, as we talked about, and you don't have Sammy Watkins anymore. It's been a couple of years removed. I think losing Watkins and Tyreek Hill is going to catch up to Mahomes. No, I'm not questioning his talent or his ability to play the position. He still is by far the best damn quarterback in the league. But what angered me about that particular quote was, how many ways can you try to twist yourself into an effing pretzel? Like, seriously, how many ways can you try to discredit what is clearly the best quarterback that any man has ever laid his eyes upon? Like, in terms of what he's able to do on the field, there's a reason why he's special. Even when the first read breaks down, he improvises. How many quarterbacks across the league can you honestly say can do that? Not many. If any, maybe zero. Zero is the correct answer. So I look at Patrick Mahomes, and I look at that moron who came out and said that, and I say, are you trying to discredit Mahomes the same way that you discredited Lamar Jackson? Because that seemed to be the thing with Lamar Jackson, although some, and I mean some of the criticism has been fair, because he hasn't shown me enough that he can win you games with the deep arm, but he's still a pretty good quarterback. That's not debatable. But I wonder, with the loss of the weapons that he's lost in Kansas City, is this the year that it finally catches up to Mahomes? Only time will tell. But this is why I think Mecole Hardman is going to need to step up huge in Kansas City this upcoming season.
So first off, well said. Secondly, with Mahomes, I think he absolutely has something to prove, because most people do consider him the best quarterback in the game today.
Yeah.
He's the most talented quarterback that I've ever seen for my money.
Yeah.
But that also means the conversation he's in, where he's trying to get to, is that when he retires, he is considered the greatest quarterback to have ever lived. And he definitely has a chance to do that with his talent, with what he's already accomplished to this point in his young career. It's absolutely on the table for him to one day have enough on his resume that he has surpassed Tom Brady in many people's eyes.
See, on that point alone is the reason is why I'm going to poke holes in that particular statement and that particular take. I think we saw the answer to that point in Super Bowl 55.
I don't think Mahomes got a fair shake, because both his tackles were out.
No one. I'm not blaming him for that loss. No. I'm thinking bigger picture.
Okay.
That loss proved yet again why it is so damn hard to repeat in the NFL as Super Bowl champions. Listen, they had the carpet laid out, but when your offensive line is banged up, Yeah, that plays a factor as into in terms of why you ultimately lost that game. And then, of course, Brady being Brady, finding reasons to be motivated. He, I mean, what more can you possibly do? The first year you leave New England, you go out and you win a Super Bowl elsewhere. That's why I look at Mahomes and I say, honestly, you are probably the best quarterback that we've seen talent-wise, but that's also the reason why I look at Mahomes differently and I say, don't try to surpass Tom Brady's legacy, because there's a reason why in nearly 20 years we haven't seen a repeat champion in the NFL. Nobody since the Patriots from the first half of the dynasty,
yep,
03 and 04, has repeated. Kansas City got a harsh wake-up call, and that's why the loss that they had in the AFC title game, I strongly believe it is going to sting for years to come, because it's not easy going to four straight AFC title games. Go ask Buffalo. Has there been a team that's gotten to five straight AFC title games? No, there hasn't.
Yeah, the Eagles went to a bunch in a row in the early 2000s.
That was 2001, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
Four straight. No team in the NFL has gotten to five straight. Not even the Patriots. Which actually, no, that's incorrect. The Patriots at one point got to consecutive ones in 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Yeah. Only the Patriots. The consecutive AFC title games.
Yep, I hear you.
But it's so hard. But I do believe that you have to be in the right system in order for it to work and have the right personnel. But man, this is going to be a test of a season for the Chiefs.
You brought up another reason that I do think Patrick Mahomes has something to prove. That loss last year, it stems from the Andy Reid 2-point conversion decision.
But Massive decision that changed everything in that game, yeah.
It falls on how Patrick Mahomes handled it moving forward. And he knows that what it did to him to not get that 2-point conversion, that he lobbied for it. Reid said, I'm trusting you, go get it done. It didn't happen. And the way Mahomes kind of turned into Reggie Bush in the 06 Rose
Bowl,
where he fumbled
and
took himself out of the game
mentally. Yep.
Mahomes needs to come back stronger from that. It's like LeBron James losing to the Mavericks in 2011, where he kind of melted down in the finals, came back a hell of a lot stronger for it. That's what Mahomes needs to do. So I think between the supporting cast around him getting worse, between what happened last year in the playoffs against Cincinnati, I think he has a lot to prove this season. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Shu, I don't love the investments that were made around him. Juju Smith-Schuster, durability concerns, as well as someone who consistently fumbles the rock. And then you look at Marquez Valdez-Scandling. It didn't work with Aaron Rodgers, so why am I to believe that it's all of a sudden going to work now with Patrick Mahomes?
Well, Scandling and Juju Smith-Schuster, oh boy. It's still a downgrade from what you had last year and even 2 years prior.
They both might be swings and misses. Now you're talking about a lackluster wide receiver group, and really just Travis Kelce and Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
The reason why I'm not even going to drag Travis Kelce, who arguably is the best tight end in football right now, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, is because they've won together.
Right.
There's that chemistry there. So I'm not worried, but you can't go into the season thinking that there is not a loss in terms of offensive weapons for Kansas City. Like, there is. Like, you're going to miss Tyreek Hill badly. And part of what made everyone else in terms of the receivers that much more effective was because that Tyreek Hill had the ability to win those one-on-one matchups. He's not there anymore. And who's going to be that guy now? It ain't going to be Travis Kelce. He's a tight end. I don't think it's going to be Clyde Edwards-Helaire either. He's not the game-changing type of player either. So Juju Smith-Schuster going from Pittsburgh to Kansas City, he's a good role player, but that's a massive gamble there because he didn't succeed as a number one receiver with Pittsburgh. He's going to go to Kansas City and play with Mahomes and think it's going to happen there. I don't see it.
Yeah, it's just a huge gamble. Maybe he has a great season, but he's kind of been, you know, disappointing for a few years in a row now in Pittsburgh,
and that's why Eric Bieniemy has got his work cut out for him. I really do think so.
That is for sure. The scheme is going to have to prop up some of that
big
talent.
Time.
Stick with us here on the Diehards, because when we come back, we'll put a bow on tonight's program. And you're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Kravitsky.
Closing time indeed here on the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Bobby Kravitsky alongside Shukri Wrights locking up shop. Shu, as we go off the air, let me ask you this. The New England Patriots in a loaded AFC, will they make the playoffs?
My answer to that is going to be no. Because I just look at this team, the way that they're constructed right now, they're not as loaded as Buffalo. They're not as loaded as Denver. They're not as loaded as Kansas City is not as loaded as it were previous years. But I think right now Buffalo, Kansas City, hell, even the Chargers, like, I put those teams ahead of New England right now. And if they do get in, they won't be like a high-seeded team. They'll be like a wild-card team at best.
So let's look at this. The Bills, and obviously there are caveats here, but the Bills, you would think, win the AFC East. We both just agreed they're the best team in the entire conference, let alone the division. The Bengals probably retain their crown in the AFC North, Colts in the AFC South, and then the AFC West could legitimately put all four teams in. Bottom line, you're going to have like five teams competing for one playoff spot. You take the field over any of them. For Brian McDonald and Shukri Wrights, I'm Bobby Kravitsky. Thank you so much for listening to the Diehards. This show will be back on the air tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of your night and enjoy the rest of your week.